Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone, and hello, Chris.
Hello, Paul.
Hi.
Hello, everyone.
Red Men Radio, number 43.
Hi, Tom.
We're going to kick off. All right, yeah, Tom's in the room as well. You all right?
I'm not Mike Dawe. I'll shout hello.
He says hello. Kick-off question, Chris, comes this week via two people. In fact, Mike Clark on the Facebook page and Jacob Burston on the Twitter page. If you're not on either of them, I highly recommend facebook.com/TheRedMenTV and @TheRedMenTV on Twitter. Mike says LFC Royal Rumble, who is the last man standing? And Jacob says, if you put all of the pool players into a Royal Rumble, who'd win and why? P.S. I'd Klopp to this if you want. So I'm about 4/5 of the way through watching the Royal Rumble from Sunday. It was spoiled for me by What Culture Wrestling's Twitter account, which has been unfollowed subsequently. Not, it should have been when they lost all of the good members of staff, but it has definitively been now and they spoiled the ending for me. General gist then when it comes to Royal Rumble, Chris, is that you watched Royal Rumbles back in the day, not so much of late. What was it about Royal Rumbles that you liked, or the memories that stand out from them?
It's just a bit of carnage, to be honest. I like a little bit of chaos, organised chaos especially. I don't know, I always seem to think that the bigger guys have the best chance of winning. Obviously, you come in later on, but then you remember the smaller guys winning it and stuff like that.
Absolutely. I mean, my favourite thing about Royal Rumbles is when they throw someone in out of the blue. Yeah. From the past, and you go, wow, this year it was the Hurricane, if you remember him, that was very much of our era. But yeah, I like a good surprise entrance. If you're adding Jürgen Klopp into this, does he win?
I read the first one, I didn't read the second one, so it's LFC Royal Rumble, who's the last man standing. It's John Achterberg, Paul.
Just by a big fact that he's survived every other onslaught on his Liverpool career, it might as well be it. Do you think he'd
prove me wrong? I mean, seriously, go on. I mean, you know, he's still here.
Is he doing a New Age Outlaws style clinging to the bottom of the corner?
I don't know, but I don't think there's anyone that can outlast John Achterberg.
That's a decent shout. It's a very decent shout. I mean, at this point, I remember one years gone by. I think I'm right in this. It's been a long time since I've really watched wrestling, but the Brock Lesnar came in very late on, and it was just like, there you go, absolute shoo-in to win it. Virgil van Dijk, I think, is in with a very good shout of winning the Royal Rumble, because he's not just... because you get your big fellas, and you have that moment where it takes like four or five men, or everyone in the ring is trying to get them out, and they either do or... they fight back. Like, trying to get Andre the Giant out of the ring was a very difficult kind of thing. I think he might have eliminated himself once to get around that problem. But I think Virgil's not that, because I think he's agile, Chris. I think he's got speed. I think he's got agility.
Is he a bit more, am I right in saying Roman Reigns-y?
No, because Roman Reigns is shit. But he's a bit more,
right.
He's a bit more just The Rock. He's a bit more, I think he's a bit more, you know, top of the line, or good all-rounder.
Top tier. Fair enough. I could see that. I mean, the two players that stood out for me were very much Virgil van Dijk, number one, and Emre Can, number two. And I think it's important when you're considering what wrestler or what Liverpool player would consider, what costumes they'd wear as well.
Sure.
Because I'm thinking Emre Can's like the Ashman Billy Gunn type of tighty, whiteys, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I considered the Virgil van Dijk, like, would he look good in that Andre the Giant costume? Probably not. No, what's he going to go for? Is he a jeans man? Because they never really suit the jeans thing.
If he's going to be a top superstar...
Achterberg is very much... it was the English guy, is it Stephen Richards or something like that? What was the English guy called? He was in it for like... he's in it forever.
Yeah, he's not English, no. You're thinking of... oh my God, his name's gone. Stephen Regal.
Stephen Regal. His character was English?
He is English. Sorry, yeah, right. I thought you said so Stevie Richards wasn't English.
No, know, no, no. I'm talking about
William Regal. William Regal. Yeah, he's British. Yeah, he is English. Yeah, he. I think if you're going to be
at the Beggs costume,
yeah, what?
The tighty whities, but looks terrible.
Oh,
as opposed to Emily Chan, who looks amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna be it, I'm of the contention, and I've never really been a big fan of it. It's not how I would ever have created my wrestlers on SmackDown back in the day. But if you want to be a top guy, you've got to go all in and just wear a pair of trunks, haven't you? You
know, unless you're like a Larice Carius, in which case I think the leggings
style.
Boys, I mean, he's perfect for that. Yeah, he's essentially a Hardy's
boy. I think you'd see a Mane would be like that. I think a Salah would be a Shawn Michaelsy type in that regard.
Absolutely.
As well. Could see a decent win from him.
Likes to kick people in the face.
Here's why Jürgen Klopp wouldn't win, by the way. Because wrestling's all about putting people over. You get, if you're a top wrestler,
he couldn't do that, could he?
No, but you get as much. Yeah, true. But you get as much. The top wrestler's got as much from helping other guys look amazing. And I think Jürgen would be one of those guys who would take an amazing fall to make someone else. To get someone else over, to get someone to win. So whether he took a, you know, like, he's the kind of guy who battles Virgil over the top rope, turns around to celebrate while Virgil clings on
and heaves
himself back over, or, you know, and then he takes a big hit from behind.
Or I suppose the other way that he'd probably go out is that, you know, you get those alliances sometimes in Royal Rumbles, don't you? And he's very much about the team. He likes developing relationships between players, and then they just turn their back on him, like Phil, for example, and then they just do him, like, you know what I mean?
Well, I'd do the way around, where one of them would be teaming up with people, yeah, come on, guys, come on, throwing people, and the teaming up to get people out, and then someone goes, yeah, thanks, Jürgen. And then he just picks them up and chucks them out himself and pisses himself laughing at the fact that he's just got someone else. I think I would love to watch it.
He'd be a very versatile wrestler, I think. Yeah. He could play both the heel and the
Who is the guy game. Who comes in to massive fanfare and is out within the first 5 seconds?
Daniel Sturridge.
And on that, I think Emre Can is as much the guy who could go from coming in as number one to winning it to being the guy who goes out in the first 5 seconds. Well, just depends what kind of mood he's in, really, doesn't it?
Absolutely does. He just have a little brain fart and throw himself over the top rope. Like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah, random shout out. You'd be dropping a... If you want your random shout from the past, you get an old wrestler who come in out of the blue. If they threw a Luis Suarez in there out the blue, I'd be delighted with that, but I think he'd be too good. Maybe someone with
Razor?
An Eric Meyer.
Or
someone like that. Ooh. For pure comedy value. Get him in. Yeah, again, he probably clears house. He does a funny, like, geez, the crowd up. Hey! Go, he's big, he's Dutch, we like him very much. Eric Meyer
goes gone. Brilliant.
And then on with the rest of the event. Fantastic. I think we've nailed that there, Chris. So just moving on to this week's podcast then. We're going to be doing news in brief, talking about a couple of the transfers out. One transfer in, not for Liverpool, unfortunately, but I think it's worth discussing, in Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Talking about Klopp saying there'll be no signings this January transfer. Obviously, some people will be listening to this after the window has shut, of course. And then we're going to move on to a little bit about the positivity returning post Huddersfield before taking more of your questions. Belter of a podcast in prospect. So news in brief. We'll start with a big one, Chris. Daniel Sturridge has joined West Brom on loan. What are your thoughts? What are your feelings?
I like this move for him. I think it shows me what type of a person that he is, that he's accepted West Brom, ultimately. Because
is that in a good way or a bad way?
In a good way for him as a character and him as a person, because I think a lot of the time during his Liverpool career, everyone, and from when he moved from Chelsea to Liverpool and all the loan moves that he's had, you know, he had loan moves, was it Bolton that he had a loan move early on in his career, and it showed everyone that he just wanted to play football, and he just wanted to score goals. And then it became, well, no, he just wants to play centre-forward and he doesn't want to do a job for the team and all that type of... Well, he's a centre-forward first and foremost, and you know, ultimately that's what that is. But the fact that he's a bit of a family man and he's gone back there for those reasons, and he's gone to a team that really doesn't look to suit him, to be perfectly honest with you. But he wants game time and he wants to get into an England squad, and he's willing to go out there and prove himself and put his career on the line, because this is going to be make or break for Daniel, I think. You know, if he can't perform at West Brom, then where do you go after that? You know what I mean? But he's backed himself to go and do that, and fair play to him for it.
I think it's two things. To be honest, there's part of me that initially was like a bit of a shithouse for not taking Inter Milan, but Inter Milan, I guess, are probably they're probably going to end up not having not too dissimilar a finish in Serie A to what West Brom have in the Premier League.
Yeah,
if West Brom, you know what I mean? Well, no, because West Brom have been a shit this season, but you know what I mean? In that, West Brom could have a good run if they've been good recent form. If they carry on that form, they could have a mid-table Premier League finish, is kind of what I'm driving at with that.
But he's been very open about it, Paul. He wants to get into the England squad.
Yeah.
You don't give yourself the better chance of getting in the England squad by playing in Italy.
You're right.
Because, listen, every fan looks down on Italy for a start. Yeah. You know, I'm sure the managers might as well. You know, you're looking at the pace of the game and just playing in front of Southgate every single week, him being able to watch Match of the Day on a Saturday and see Daniel Sturridge hopefully score some goals, just says that he's going to have a better chance of that. And he's told the truth the whole way along, and I like that.
Not a massive trip from Burton, from the England camp, to be able to go and have a look at him as well.
They've got great medical facilities over there as well, so he'll be there more than Southgate will be going the other way.
Absolutely. That's what I agree on in terms of if it is for getting himself into the, you know, Gareth Southgate's plans, then you're right. It makes sense that Southgate be able to actually watch him easily rather than thinking, oh God, am I going to go all the way to Italy? Milan's lovely, but am I going to go all the way there to watch Daniel Sturridge? Maybe not. It's not like Joe Hart going to Torino when, you know, he's there. He's pretty much guaranteed his place in the England squad at that point, one way or the other. Interesting one. We wish him all the best. And this is not to say his Liverpool career is over, but let's be honest, I think it is really. Good. I am more. This makes more sense to me, and I wonder whether this impacted his decision. Having seen West Brom play last week, the fact that Jay Rodriguez was leading the line and they were playing two up front as well. You know that you could. There could be a surprisingly good fit, like a fit that we wouldn't have thought a month ago or six weeks ago.
Oh, under Pulis. I mean, it would never have been an option for Sturridge, would it? I think that's a great point, Paul. You know, I think if he wants to play and he wants to get back to the form that he's in, then he's also playing with another guy who's hungry for success in his career, and he's going to go out there, Rodriguez, and prove people wrong after the injuries that he's had. It could work in both of their favour, ultimately.
Yeah, absolutely. Watch Jay Rodriguez get the call up instead of Daniel. Ovi Ejaria joining Sunderland on loan, and worryingly, according to the Sunderland Echo, dubbed the English Pogba on the way there. That's not going to help him any for a start.
It's a little bit of pressure for a loan move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the English Pogba is either, you know, I mean, that probably tells you how shit English football is if he's the English Pogba, that he's you know, 20 years old and he's playing for Sunderland in a relegation scrap in the Championship. I like Ovi Ejaria, to be fair. I think he's a good footballer. It's interesting that he'll end up going to Sunderland, which is who we turned the loan move for Ben Woodburn down from. I wasn't keen on Woodburn going there. I'm not sure. I'm less arsed about Ovi Ejaria.
Yeah, I don't mind either way. I wouldn't have really minded if it was Woodburn going to Sunderland or not. But Ovi Ejaria is definitely further away from the first team. And as such, you know, he's a classy little footballer, Ovi Ejaria, isn't he? He's good on the ball. He's good in tight spaces and stuff like that. So
big lad as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a rude awakening for him. And we say this every time someone's rumoured to go out on loan or someone goes out on loan. It's time for them to step up. And, you know, he'll learn more in this short spell with Sunderland than he will do playing in the under-23s for the rest of the season. Because let's be honest, he's played the season there.
Yeah, he's 20 years old as well, isn't he? I think there's a difference between sending a 17, 18-year-old lad out on loan to sending a 20-year-old lad. You need to be developing. You need to be playing footy at that age. You're dead right in that regard. It'd be interesting to see what if he ever comes back. You know, he wasn't on anyone's radar. Klopp took a little bit of a shine to him. He looked great pre-season before last. Hasn't that, you know, got a couple of opportunities last season, particularly on the bench, a lot more than I think we would have had him. Pardon me. And I like him, but I'm not sure quite where he fits in with us. I guess we'll know more come the end of the season.
It's interesting. I think the formation may have affected Ovi a little bit. You know, we moved to 4-3-3, haven't we, over the last 18 months? And I don't see where he fits in that formation. Whereas we were playing 4-2-3-1 when Klopp first came into the league, weren't we? And you could see opportunities down the line for him there. And it's about Ovi Ejaria going out and developing to be a player that can be used in a formation that we use.
It's interesting. I remember someone talking about Jerome Sinclair years ago. I think it was actually something Aubrey passed on from knowing a coach or something like that. And they were talking about just the difference in quality required to score an assist at the top level compared to under 21, under 23 level. If he's going to play, if he's going to be a number 10, or thereabouts, or if he's ever going to fit into the, he's not going to do the DM role for us, and he's not going to be the box-to-box midfielder for us. He wants to be the class act in midfield. He has to learn how to score and assist at a much higher level than what he's playing at the moment. And again, I don't think, you don't see many players come from the Championship at that, in those positions and into the Premier League, which doesn't necessarily bode well for him. But you're dead right. It's a step up in terms of the quality. He might handle it. It might just mean that we get a few million quid for him in the summer, which, you know, at the worst case is probably it's something, isn't it? But again, I like him. I hope he does well. I have no hopes for him, which might actually help in some regards, because I'd be pleasantly surprised to see him perform. Yeah, as mentioned, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has joined Arsenal, Chris. On paper, that is a look. He's a great player, isn't he?
Yeah.
And that's a great signing. There aren't many clubs in the league who wouldn't want Aubameyang in their squad.
There aren't many fan bases of clubs in the league.
Yeah,
that makes a difference, though, doesn't it? You know, I'm one of those fans who wanted Aubameyang at Liverpool, and because I can see what he does on the football field, and that's what I'm judging him on. I've heard rumours of him being a tit and missing training sessions and all that type of stuff, and it's absolutely true. I'm not saying it's not.
They're not rumours. The fact,
you know. I'd have liked him at Liverpool. I'm particularly impressed with Arsenal's business since the Sanchez stuff. I think they've somehow turned a massive loss into a gain. But he's got to hit the ground running. And I don't think they've got the manager that will get the best out of him this season.
Yeah.
I think he'll be a force in the league.
Yeah.
But I don't think it'll be for Arsene Wenger and Arsenal.
It'd be interesting, because there's not the Premier League doesn't have an amazing track record of guys at that age coming in to the league and maintaining that level of form, particularly strikers.
He's got the pace, though. Yeah. I think that'll help him.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these other players that have come in, your Shevchenkos and all that, they've lost that little yard of pace, whereas I think I'm right. I've read something yesterday that over 30 metres, he's as fast as Usain Bolt.
Right. Yeah.
And cool. That's incredible. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's some top-end speed there.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That'll worry, you know, Johnny Evans and the likes.
Massively so. Yeah, it's going to worry everyone, to be fair. Very good. I think he scored 61 goals in this season and last season combined. So that's like, what, just over a year and a half of footy.
Since he came into the Bundesliga, there's only Lewandowski that scored more goals than him. Like, Lewandowski's a top quality player. Like,
yeah, I mean, you consider as well. You know, under Klopp, he wasn't even a striker. He was a winger in that time. So he's developed into one of the just classiest top grade forwards in world football.
It's funny, isn't it, that I think it shows you a little bit. And listen, maybe I'm being a bit harsh here, and maybe I'm putting my red tinted glasses on because we never went in for him, and I really wanted that to happen. Lacazette and Aubameyang are two players that have been rumoured to be going for a long time. Now, Lacazette, obviously, a lot longer than Aubameyang. I find it interesting. It feels like a last roll of the dice from Arsene Wenger to take the players that no other clubs have gone in for.
Absolutely. I don't see how... I mean, look, there are solutions to having them in your team. You can play them in rotation. You can play two up top or what have you. But it doesn't feel like a calculated move from Arsenal. It doesn't feel like they are putting the last piece of a puzzle together. It feels like they're ripping up the plan mid-season and they're buying Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang and just going to shove them into the team and try and get it working.
Get the old band back together.
No, exactly.
Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang were incredible together.
Absolutely. Definitely. And Ozil signed a new contract today as well, so that'll give everyone a lift. My big concern over them, and why I'm not... While I am jealous of the individual bits of business that they've done, and it's something we'll come on to talk about because I think it leads us quite nicely into this, is that it is very short-term thinking in their regard. And I think where Arsenal will have a problem is when it comes to the summer. This summer, certainly, next summer, without a doubt, when all of their best players are 30 years old,
yeah.
Where do they go from there? Because at the minute, their next generation hasn't kicked on the way that they have done in previous years.
They haven't got a spine either, Paul.
No.
You know, they are talking about Jack Wilshere as like the leader amongst that side again. And listen, he's a quality footballer and stuff, but no, come on. Come on now, don't be silly.
No, absolutely. But this does lead us on to our first big topic of the pod. And I'll be honest, you know, we have to do this here. We'll do this pseudo chronologically because I think a day ago, prior to the Huddersfield match, everyone, the entire fan base was down and dumps. I've seen people who are genuinely massively level-headed and upbeat, just gone.
My head fell off.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a shame that we kind of have to go, we'll delve back into it because it needs to be done, but then bear in mind, if you're listening, don't worry, we're going to come and talk about Huddersfield and we're going to get everyone picked up after the back. But talking about the short-term signings thing, I actually think the Arsenal stuff has exacerbated a lot of thinking around the January stuff, and you kind of alluded to it there. You know, Arsenal have gone out and bought two players who would have improved Liverpool's squad no end.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the timing of it as well, Paul, because I don't think they had any idea that Sanchez was going this window. Just like Liverpool didn't have any idea that Pochettino was going this window, but they've managed to make the moves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think both clubs were resigned to losing the players in the summer. I think Arsenal were probably looking to run down Sanchez's contract. I think Liverpool were hoping to sell Coutinho in the summer. I think that's much as obvious from both clubs. One of the teams has gone out and made massive moves. Mm-hmm. One of the teams hasn't.
Yeah.
That's where it all came from. And that's actually not even the crux of the issue. If you want to get to the nub of it, it's Man City. It's what they're doing, you know what I mean? And at time of recording, Mahrez has just still put a transfer request in, I believe. I don't think there's any bit movement on that, but going out and signing Laporte, an under-21 player for $57 million, is absolutely mental. These guys are top of the league and they're not resting on the laurels, and that's what did it for me. Like,
well, again, it's the playing field that they're on is ridiculous, isn't it? When the possibility of finding out Leroy Sané's injured at the weekend, with a few days left in the transfer window, and potentially spending £75 million on Mahrez just for the fuck
6 weeks. That's how long he's out for. Because then after that, he's not getting in the side.
Exactly, for shits and giggles, like, you mean? They're just going to look to bring that in. It's crazy, and it kind of makes a bit of a mockery of their little stance over the Sanchez stuff. Like, oh, no, we haven't really got money. We can't really spend X, Y, and Z. Liars, Man City.
Maybe they wanted United to buy him.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, again, that's the thing about the Sanchez stuff for me. Similar to Arsenal's business in, it's not medium to long-term thinking for Man United. They are, although it is more vindicated by Man United, not even super recently, but and under a completely different manager, but of course the Robin Van Persie thing under Ferguson at least gives them some recent evidence to suggest, hey, look, this it's a good, it can be a shrewd move to do this kind of thing. But yeah, I saw someone actually saying that Liverpool have been negligent in this transfer window, and I'll ask you a question on this, because my immediate reaction was to totally dive in and agree, because I think in a base level, like I've said many times before, I'm probably on this podcast already, but whatever, we've taken, in Sturridge and Coutinho, we've effectively taken about 30 goals out of this side.
Yeah.
And then add assist or whatever onto that as well. And we've not looked to replace that. But I think the timing of stuff this window, like everyone banged on about all summer and all season was, it's criminal that Liverpool have not signed a centre-half. If we'd signed Virgil van Dijk today, I think psychologically speaking, even if it meant costing us the great derby winning header and all that, it would have made people feel a lot better about it. But because of the timing of and because of the sheer weight of the amount of money that's sloshing around Liverpool's bank account, it's very hard to see it as anything other than a massive missed opportunity.
I think it is a massive missed opportunity, Paul. I think I agree with you on the timing side of things. That does change your outlook on things. Obviously, bringing Virgil van Dijk in is great, but you didn't want to just bring Virgil van Dijk in. You wanted to keep Pochettino as well.
Yeah.
You know, you can moan about the timings all you want, but ultimately, all everyone really wanted was Pochettino to stay until the end of the season.
Yeah.
The timings don't matter on that, whether he goes on the first day, goes on the same day as van Dijk comes in. It doesn't really make any odds. For me, it's about why I've been so vocal on my opinion over the last couple of days is because I do think that I don't think it's negligence from a business perspective, because I don't think that I think that spending your money right is very, very important because what ends up happening is Hicks and Gillette all over again if you're just going to start throwing money around, you know what I mean? But
Or not.
There is negligence for me in that, maybe negligence isn't the right word, so apologies. Not being able to find the targets in 6 months is a bit nuts.
Yeah.
You know, when teams have gone out there and made moves in 5 days or something like that, but then that's what Liverpool do. They take the time over these things. They make sure that they get the best value that they can. You know, they don't want to be held to ransom because they don't want to overpay and all that type of stuff. And listen, I agree with all that. Of course I do.
Is it made easier if Coutinho, if we just sell Coutinho in the summer rather than waiting this long?
I don't because see what tangible benefit Liverpool get from selling Phil Coutinho now.
That's the point, is that I wonder whether if he goes in the summer it's because we were treated to half a season of him and we had the best squad depth in attack we've had since whenever, God, probably ever, that we've seen how good it can be. And it spoilt us in that regard, and we're not able to look back at it and see that as like. I used the analogy to you the other day. It's like I used to work in a pub, and someone was getting charged happy hour prices for 3 hours when they should have had them for one, and they come to me afterwards and said, "And I've been getting charged this." I said, "Rather than be upset that you're not getting the price anymore, think about all the money you save for those 2 hours, and think about the good times." It's very difficult to look back and go, "Well, we got a bonus half a season out of Phil Coutinho in some regards." The thing that I can't fault the logic though, is that we've set ourselves into a situation where it seems there's just a big Coutinho shaped hole.
Yeah, and that's it. And there's no one to fill it. And listen, Adam Lallana's a great player, but he was already in the squad.
Yeah,
he's not a replacement. He was there. You know what I mean? And Ings and Solanke for me aren't quite ready to take that step up yet. Even if they start scoring goals, they're not going to be playing at Phil Coutinho's level. Otherwise, they'd be playing ahead of him.
Yeah.
And it was as simple as that for me. Now, you know, I don't think I've spoken about this, but over the last sort of few days, what I've realised is, what happens if Phil Coutinho just sat in the reserves? We're in the exact same boat. We're still going to get the same amount of money in the summer.
Yeah. Well, I said this a couple of weeks ago, didn't I? I said, I think you might disagree at the time, but I said, I would let him rot, and I'd keep him there, and because you might find that with 5 games left in the season, you're faced with the situation Chelsea had with Hazard 2 years ago, in that he all of a sudden realises he needs to play some games for fitness and form ahead of the international tournament, and you might need something mega at the end of that season, and he'll just go, all right, fuck it, I'll go and give it a go. And that's why it still is baffling.
The only team that wins out of this is Barcelona.
Yeah.
And the only team that wins out of Liverpool selling Daniel or loaning Daniel Sturridge is West Brom.
Yeah,
I don't get that.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I don't get that. What made this front three so great was having the ability to pick 3 from 4.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And only the fullness of time will tell on the rest of it.
Yeah,
but I do believe that being able to rotate those players and be able to keep those players fresh and being able to keep the opposition guessing is what contributed to them working so well together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now you're just 3 from 3 and you're chancing it. You're chancing it big time.
I think the Daniel Sturridge one I can make me peace with, because I don't think we saw enough from him this season. You know, I think he had a couple of...
But why? I agree with that, and I don't think he's ever fit the formation.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he's going to score 15 goals between now and the end of the season, but he can score goals, and he did score goals, and he did win games for £1.5 million.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And a little bit off the wage budget.
Yeah.
Like, and we're not replacing him. I could understand if you need to free up some space to get someone else in, because you've got £120,000 a week on your wages. But really?
Yeah.
£1.5 million. He scores 2 goals, that's it. Yeah. That's pay for.
Yeah, I suppose this is the problem we have with all of this, though, is that, I'm not sure why it's our job to do this, but again, it's about perspective, isn't it? Is that we'll never know what it's the intangibles of what they're doing inside the walls of Melwood that make it a worthwhile deal or not a worthwhile deal. And it's that thing of, if... attitude, like Daniel Sturridge, if Daniel Sturridge is just agitating and causing problems because he wants to play football, then it's the example that you're setting to the other players. The issue that ultimately, the issue this boils down to, isn't it, is that it's a gamble. And it's because we are gambling that one of Solanke or Ings will score enough goals to keep us ticking over. We're gambling on the fitness of the first choice attacking players, and we're gambling on a few goals contributed by the other guys that are present in that regard. And I think that's the hardest thing to swallow, because all we have is the few experiences we have of watching these players with our own eyes, plus a chart that says
no goals, minutes played,
no assists, goals, exactly. And if you were to base that on that, if football was based purely in the black and white of it, it seems absolutely crazy for us to do that. The thing that we're, like I said, I think it goes back to the lack of negligence in that regard, is that I think if you, before I come to that, the only other way to justify it is, and I still don't believe this, because we're being told, the press have been briefed, that there's the whole of that Coutinho money is there to be spent. Is that if that's not true, and we needed to sell Coutinho to finance Van Dijk, then I could make, weirdly, even though I would be annoyed that Liverpool haven't spent more money, I could rationalise it a bit better, because I still think it made more sense to have a more balanced, I can just about, if that makes sense, I can rationalise improving an area of the team that desperately needed improving if it meant slightly weakening an area of the team that we were very strong in.
I suppose that's predicated on the fact that you have proposed that Liverpool have to do that. I believe that Liverpool didn't have to.
Well,
do
exactly.
That.
That's what I mean.
But that's what everyone's telling us.
These are all things that we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. And listen, I'm going on what I've been told. And what the press have said is that money's available, which makes the decision baffling.
Yeah, that's it. And I guess then what it does boil down to is, it's trust on Klopp's part, isn't it? He clearly has, because I think another, and this is the thing that we don't know, and this is where I see the arguments around it, which is crazy, and it's led to so much infighting amongst Liverpool's fans in the last couple of weeks, is people say it's statements like, it's all FSG's fault, or there's a few, like, and to my mind, going on what we're told, it's the manager's fault. It's Jurgen Klopp's fault that we're in this situation, because he's the one who's told us time and time again he sanctions the moves. And that's why I think it's very hard to fathom and how to feel on it, because we love Jurgen Klopp. He's a great fit for Liverpool. He gets the fan base. He's got us playing some of the best football that we've ever seen at Anfield. We are meeting our objectives as far as the season goes quite nicely, but he's just chosen to get rid of two players who could make that job easy for himself. How do you rationalise that?
I'm pissed off.
No, maybe, but yeah.
I'm pissed off with him. Yeah. I'm pissed off with whoever makes those decisions. I'm not aiming my fume at Jurgen Klopp, because I do think more than just Jurgen Klopp. Because I do think that Edwards is going to have a say in it. I do think that scouts are going to have a say in all of this stuff as well. Maybe not the sanction of moves, but the signing of new players. I think there is a team of people working.
True,
at Liverpool.
But he has. But if we're going on the we go what we're told, we have to take it equally on face value that Jurgen Klopp is the guy who says yes and no.
Yeah, but there's a reason for Jurgen Klopp to be able to say yes and no to these deals, isn't there? I mentioned in the video that I did on YouTube that I said, don't ask Jurgen Klopp to be the moral compass of this football club. And
what do you mean by that? Because I disagree with that.
One of the things that I meant is that, you know, Jurgen Klopp obviously wants the club to be successful on the pitch and as a business. And I think that that's something that's been laid at his feet, that he understands that Liverpool can't compete with Manchester City on these levels. So he doesn't ask, you know, he sees the value in having that 142 million. And let's say he thinks, oh, I'd better not waste any of this money, which means that I'm going to buy someone in the summer when I know it's right. Because I know if I overspend by 20 million now, I'm going to have 20 million less to spend in the summer. And I think that's where
Is that a moral compass, or is that just a financial reality?
Maybe I've said it wrong, Paul, but ultimately that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So do you disagree with
no,
that?
No, but what I mean, no, I meant the moral compass thing. I think that, I'm not sure it's the right expression for it, is the point. Okay. I think it's more that he shouldn't be the business compass for it.
Whatever you want to call it, that's my point.
Because I think that he's right to, I think he's the perfect person to be the moral compass for Liverpool because he, it's him who's setting the ethos.
But we're not talking about that now, we're talking about
true. But I think there's a, again, it's very hard to fathom out because, like I say, he has to take the blame. He's the one who's decided ultimately that he wants to put us in this position because the money, what we've seen with the Van Dijk thing as an example, is that they're prepared, if he says he wants someone, they'll pay, they're prepared to pay whatever the fuck it takes to get that someone.
But we know that Liverpool have said that 90 million is too much for Thomas Lamar.
But maybe.
Well, that's what's been said.
But again, that's when it comes to those type of things, we don't know if that's actually been said. That's a lot. That is hearsay and conjecture, isn't it? But,
I don't know.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It is, but what we don't. But it, but again,
I'm not sure, Paul. I think that's been said.
But where has it been said?
In the news, in the Liverpool Echo, Paul Joyce, all of these players were all talking. Yeah. All of these, journalists were all talking about it.
Again, I think that's.
And if we're going on what we've been told by those people and what we've been briefed,
I don't think I don't think that's as clear cut either way. But yeah, but the point is that okay, what it boils down to is that there's a. Yeah, I don't know where we're getting sidetracked. The point is that it is Jurgen Klopp's decision. So, we have to make peace with that?
Yeah, because everybody makes mistakes. Everybody makes good decisions. Everybody makes bad decisions, you know what I mean? And Jurgen Klopp's made more good decisions than bad decisions at Liverpool Football Club. Of course, I'm going to still continue to support him. I can disagree with what he's doing, Paul. I disagree with substitutions sometimes.
No, absolutely.
You know, I disagree with formations that he's played. And my fume is directed at the football club and everybody who makes those decisions.
Yeah, but the point is then, moving that forward from there, what happens if Liverpool falls short of the objective, say, of qualifying for the Champions League again this season, and Jurgen Klopp has shouldered this, how does that change your thinking about him?
Okay, good question. He's learned from his mistakes in the past. I think we've seen that over his tenure. I think what we've seen is a Liverpool side that massively tired in January last season. I think he's changed that. I think we saw more rotation from his side this season. You know, he was barely rotating players last season. We've seen 4, 5, 6 rotations every single week. So this is a guy who can learn from his mistakes. And I don't think it'll be a position he'd put us in again. He will have less credit in the bank for next season.
Yeah.
What's the thing on a bomb?
The fuse.
My fuse will be a lot shorter with him because of that.
Yeah. No, it's tough, isn't it? And that's why, and again, it feels baffling. It feels crazy that I can't understand why he would do this. The only thing it's made slightly more, it's slightly easier for me is things like the Maris thing, for an example, is that we don't know at the time of recording, we don't know how much that if he does move to Man City or not. But the last talk was like £75 million odd. If he'd moved to 40, I'd have been annoyed because I think there's a degree to which he's a £25 million player with a bit of inflation, £40 million, you've got that bit of extra cash in the bank. You can spend £40 million because we've got a bonus of people paying over the odds for Phil Coutinho. So you can probably, you could piss away 40 million quid for a short-term solution. When you start to get into breaking your transfer record again for a guy that you don't really want, that's when I start to, you know, I go, okay, well, I can rationalise that decision not being made. The Lamar stuff, again.
Liverpool went over to meet Lamar and they went over to Monaco to meet their representatives, didn't they? And he turned around at the start of the window and said, how much do you want for Thomas Lamar? And they went 90 million quid and Liverpool went, too rich for our blood.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this, if that changes, come back to us because we're here. That's the conversations that happen between Liverpool and Monaco. So they are interested in him and they know that the price was too rich. So they've clearly decided that 90 million is too rich.
Imagine it's weird, isn't it? Oh, again, perspective changes these things. Because if when you're in a more relaxed situation about stuff, £90 million, if you let's pretend Thomas Lamar wasn't French and didn't play for Monaco. He played for, pick another fucking bang average fucking team in a European league, and he played, and he was Portuguese or fucking Algerian or whatever, and you looked at his goal return for his age, you'd be nowhere in it. You'd be fucking flipping on Liverpool for paying £90 million for that kind of thing. Like, and it's so tough at the moment, isn't it? Because balancing our expectations with the realities of there is a finite amount of money going in the pot, with there's a very specific set of requirements that the manager has for the type of player that he recruits. It's baffling. I genuinely at this point don't know what the answer is to this.
It's made more difficult by the fact that I don't think clubs know the value of players at the moment.
Yeah.
And that changes the playing out. If we don't know the values of players, well, the clubs have always known the value of their assets. And when clubs don't know the value of their assets, they're going to try for as much as they can possibly get. Like, you know, when you look at it as pure, you know, ink on paper, Lamar doesn't make sense. But Mahrez actually does at 75. Mm-hmm. If you look at what he's done over the last 2 years, but who's the more valuable player? Well, I think it's Thomas Lamar because he's younger and he's got a lot more years in his legs and stuff. But having not proved anything really other than 1.5 good seasons, how do you go out and spend 90 million? I don't disagree with the Jürgen Klopp in his shoes turning around and going 90 million's too much for this kid in his shoes.
Yeah.
But I'm not in his shoes. I'm a
no, fan. Exactly. And that's what it is, isn't it? I contend that it puts added pressure on the summer. But it's one of those things. It's like, hopefully, I can't wait for the window to shut because at least it'll. I mean, there'll be some people who are just desperate for the "I told you so" of it all, you know, and they'll be like, every time it goes bad, I told you we should have done this, because people love being right about things at all times, don't they? But what we should be able to do is go, all right, look, he made his decision, fair fucks to him, you know what I mean? He's a dickhead. If he gets it wrong, that's a fucking massive gamble. Because I don't feel this is the same as letting Andy Carroll go out and not completing the Clint Dempsey deal.
Yeah.
That's negligence. That was just fucking stupidity and from Ian Ayre and from whatever. People just didn't get that shit across the line. Lesser so like the Canopy Anchor thing a couple of years ago, because there were extenuating circumstances in that, which we've talked on Redman in the past. But it's defo been a stance taken this time round, and that's again why it's dead hard, because there's a guy who we love who has done something that is so baffling to us that it's like,
it's not that baffling though, is it, when you look at what he's done in his career? And that's the thing, and that flips it full circle even more, because you go, well, I trust in Jürgen Klopp, I trust him 100%. And he's just done what Jürgen Klopp was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Trust in the players, not make moves in January, blah, blah, blah. But the difference is he's doing it with my club and my team and my season and
money,
all this and all that. And you're thinking to yourself, I'd have done this differently.
Yeah.
And that's why I think fans are having such a struggle with it. You know what it is?
It's a world-class striker. It's a striker that you don't necessarily, you think could be world-class, and he's barreling in on goal and he's got a man square to win you the Champions League. And at the minute, you're not sure that he's the finished article, because Fernando Torres of 08-09, you know, he's just going to just come slot that Nando and win it for us. Fernando Torres of 06-07 or 07-08 or whatever is 07-08 is decent, but you're still going,
mate, square it
and let him do it. But you know, until he sticks that ball in the back of the net, and does it. We're going to exist in limbo, and this is that point with Klopp. Is I think he's built up loads of credit in the bank, and I think the vast majority of people, again, I think we'll all, most of us will return to a level head on this, and kind of will come onto the Huddersfield game. I think helps with that immeasurably.
The problem is there are going to be a lot of people, myself probably included, in this, where the scars are going to be there, and it's not going to take much to open them again, and that might be a problem for him.
It's mad though, as an attitude when you think about it. It's like, I think.
But that's what happens in
life. No, I know, but I mean, I get it.
It's like someone who's had the bird cheat on them and they get into the next relationship and they're always checking over the shoulder and all that type of stuff. That's hard to get away from in life.
No, but I get that if there's been, like, if someone's cheated on you, but at the minute it's like she's just looked at someone. You've caught her looking at the side of your eye.
This is the problem. As with everything, how many times we've said this on podcasts and shows over the years, we exist in a grey area. And we're still not used to that fact.
Yeah.
And we still want all the answers and we still base opinions off nothingness a lot of the time. And that's the thing that I struggle with because I can make an opinion on something, and I absolutely have done in this case.
Yeah.
But what are the foundations of that opinion? Ultimately, it comes back to, I'm just being told what other people are telling me.
And also, just at the end of the day, what boils down to is we're not journalists, we're fans. And we're entitled to be fucking outraged, and then the next week we're entitled to be absolutely head over heels in love with what we're doing in the game, because that's what football fandom is. The hard part and what we do, generally speaking, we're quite good at, is largely not being pulled one way or the other by it. But I agree.
It's too far off the centre line, isn't it?
I think there's going to be a lot of people who think, because I think the scars analogy, I get where you're going. I think the scars analogy would be more if we failed this season. And then we found ourselves in the same situation the next season I would understand the
communication
of it.
Yeah, you're right.
If Liverpool meet objectives this season, what I don't want is people going, oh, well, we could have finished that. What if we'd finished a place higher? Look, if we meet our objectives, we fucking meet our objectives. There will be pressure on it in the summer. What I'm encouraged by is that it's what he's done in the past and how he's gone about it. And the thing that I cling to, and this is not a tangible, because we don't see this with our own eyes, is that what Jürgen does is he builds a squad and he builds a collective mentality within that squad. And what we will never be able to understand is the impact that he feels that Phil Coutinho, Daniel Sturridge, etc. has, and that he feels the benefit to that is in giving more trust to a Danny Ings and to a, you know, to a Dom Solanke. What was mad on the side from it, Bobby Firmino and Andy Robertson celebrating against Huddersfield filled my heart with joy. Like, there was a proper
Robertson's
like,
in the gang now.
Roberts like
Phil didn't like him.
Loves Robertson. Like he gave him a big, you know, he was like, yeah, in his, you know, give him a big love. And I was like, that's what we've got now. You know, the start, that win was absolutely necessary to exercise the demons of the things that are going on with that, and that's what Jürgen does. He doesn't do it. It's hard and it's very difficult because he doesn't do it in a traditional way, and particularly, and it's that's loads easier to accept when we've got no money. It's much harder to accept when we're told there's £140 million out there, and then you watch Man City. You go, do what Man City are doing, do what Arsenal are doing, do whatever. That, you know what I mean, and this is why we're moving on. The massive relief that came with that Huddersfield win. Look, you were there. I imagine it was even more so in there. But me and Tom were just sat here in the studio, and it was like the first goal, even more so the second goal.
The first goal was a really underwhelming celebration because of the pressure. And I think everyone was apprehensive. The first sort of 30 seconds after the goal, you normally get a big cheer after maybe 15 seconds and then everyone goes into a big song. That didn't really happen. Everyone was kind of focused on the kickoff and not conceding the goal straight away. And, you know, that's not a situation I've been in as a Liverpool fan very often. You know, you've just scored a goal and it's a really understated celebration that shows the nerves that was in the ground there, and there was people behind me before the game, and it was quite vitriolic, the right way?
Yeah, like dripping with anger.
Yeah, so, you know, lots of people screaming, get your fucking heads on, as the team are lining up, and it's not just guys behind me, it's guys to the sides, and all similar sentiments. I'm thinking, this is gnarly. This is a bit strange. This isn't a normal Liverpool Fields of Anfield Road warm-up song. Like, you know what I mean? This is like people who are really angry at the moment. And once that second goal goes in, and the timing of it as well was absolutely perfect, just on the stroke of half-time. And then it became party season because we'd just done what we're kind of doing in the agenda for this podcast is you're taking you from being really downhearted to a Liverpool side that, you know, footy's bosh, footy's amazing, footy's incredible. This is what we can do. This is what these players can still do, and we can still prove to everyone that we can go out and achieve this season.
It's crazy, isn't it, when you think about like what this last week and how mad a week in football can be. I think everything is exacerbated by the pressure that's on this season, and it comes down to that whole like the six clubs for four spaces is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous, and it's just because nobody's totally dropped off yet. Arsenal are teetering, and now we can't even relax on that because they just got out and bought players that were all like, oh shit, that'll make them dead good. But Tuesday was perfect in that regard because it was us getting back to what we do. It was Liverpool dominating, largely having it quite comfortable, barring that little scare just before the first goal. And then seeing Arsenal get not just beaten by Swansea, but beaten well by Swansea. You know, to lose 3-1, puts our 1-0 in perspective.
And that was going, that rippled through the stadium. You know, the lad next to me goes, Swansea are winning 2-1 there. You know, I was like, fuck off. And then I passed it on. It was like Chinese whispers. And then you could hear people a few rows behind us going, Arsenal getting beat 2-1. And then it was like, 3-1. And it's like, we're not shit. We're not shit. Swansea are good now. We need to reevaluate what we're doing. And that's kind of what it went like. And the atmosphere just got better and better. Yeah. And we fed off it and we quietened their fans down. And the team were playing brilliantly. And we had a million and one passes and billions and billions and billions and billions of passes. If anyone's seen that Donald Trump edit, probably not many, because Tom was the one who showed me the video and he's in the 1%
exclusive videos. It's mad though that's happened a few times this season. As the results that we've been dead down about in isolation in the Liverpool bubble have all come against teams. I think the three ones that stand out for me, there's more, but there's three that really stand out, being Watford, Burnley, and now Swansea.
I thought they barely aren't shit.
Exactly. We were at the time, we were like, fucking disgrace. And then both of them, like Watford have tailed off massively, haven't they? Like, but both of those teams have gotten some big results against teams that, you know, in and around us in the league as well. And it's mad then. I say it's great how, and mentioning Donald Trump, I think John Oliver did a great thing about like the whataboutism and how he uses that to curb a lot of anger towards him. But what about the state of these fuckers over here? But it does help. Absolutely. Helps massively. Looking at Arsenal, if Arsenal just lost that 1-0, we'd be like, okay, sound. But the fact that it's just another thing that settles the nerves a little bit that, look, we are above. We're Liverpool. There's a reason why Liverpool are ahead of these teams in the table. And again, without getting mired back in the what we've lost and others have gained, you know, Liverpool have earned the right to be where they are in the table right now. And when things were going well, we weren't wrong to assess Arsenal as being in a little bit of trouble. They're not so much in trouble that they're going to finish 7th or 8th because there's still a massive gap down there. But, you know, great. Made me feel loads better about life. And, you know, it's going to be a very interesting week. I think this is one of those, not pivotal, but we've talked about the comparisons with 13-14 quite a bit in the last 6 to 8 weeks, and how January and that season was when we clicked into what we were doing, and we became an impossible chase for the teams below us. They just started to switch off to following Liverpool and started getting mired in their own little problems because, you know, they had to be perfect to match us. Yeah. And, you know, there's a chat, you know, if Liverpool can continue doing what they're doing, not even exceptionally, just keep ticking over, you know, we'll know the Spurs results, Spurs-Man United result, obviously, on Wednesday night. But, you know, no matter which way that goes, that result is a great result for Liverpool, no matter which way it goes, because we've put ourselves into a good position in that regard. Spurs going into a tough run, if we're able, you know, it gives us a good chance to capitalise on all these things. Things are great. What was nice just on the individual performance though, Chris, a couple of people, we've done a lot. We've done the Man of the Match podcast, which is absolutely fantastic, by the way. In fact, before we talk about, we're going to talk about Jordan Henderson and Loris Karius and Bobby Firmino, just give you a little bit of a clip, a little bit of a taste of what's happening on the RedmenTV.com. Tom,
rocking it on the Man of the Match podcast.
Sai's time starts now.
Okay, so the two games before Huddersfield, West Brom and Swansea, Emre Can was given the captain's armband and he really struggled. We needed a big performance from him yesterday and we got it. He absolutely bossed that game. He completed 79 passes, which was the most out of the midfield, and 91% of those passes were accurate, which is, again, the most in the midfield. Mo Salah was always a threat yesterday, and that was because Can was always covering for him on the right wing in the midfield, basically allowing Salah to do whatever he wanted because he knew that Can was behind him, defending and covering. And you're talking about big moments in these games, especially against the small teams like West Brom and Swansea. The big moments matter. You need a bit of luck and a bit of skill, and we got that with Can's goal. It was a brilliant effort, but then you got the little bit of luck as well. But what a shot it was. I think it was probably going in anyway, to be honest. He nearly has two assists as well with two headers for Mane. They were both amazing crosses, and Mane probably should do a bit better with them. But what absolutely incredible, those crosses. He gets fouled for the penalty.
Yeah, yeah. Good argument all round. And then I'll do mine on John Matip.
Great stuff. Jordan Henderson, Chris, I think because he had, by his standards, a pretty poor season. But I don't think he's been so poor as to justify the amount of hatred he seems to get from people online. It's been great to see him, his little cameo at the weekend and coming back into that Huddersfield game, because it was noticeable how much better we were for having him in the team.
Yeah, absolutely. What's mad, and maybe this is a little bit off topic, Paul, is I don't even think he was the best midfielder in the side.
No.
I think Can was.
Yeah.
I thought Can was exceptional.
Can was my man of the match.
I thought he was unbelievable. Him and Firmino were the two guys that I gave nines to, if I remember. Run close by Dejan Lovren. But James Milner was, very, very close to them as well. I thought Jordan Henderson was fantastic, but it freed up Emre Can to go and do what Emre Can does best. And, I think we've seen with that, even just that one performance, the Chans are much better than a six. And Jordan Henderson understands that position much more than Emre Can, because the speed with which he was moving the ball from side to side, and always making sure that it's, even when he doesn't receive the ball, Paul, and maybe it's different when you'll remember from when he was playing well at Anfield last season or away games, whatever, it's that he's always open for a pass. And he always gives players options, and that makes your team better, because like any strategic sport, just doing the same thing over and over doesn't work.
Yeah.
In a strategy game, you've got to have those options there, and Henderson, whether he gets the ball played to or not, is always available for a pass more so than Can in that six.
What was great is that two things in that regard. I actually think Emre freed Henderson up as well, because we actually saw him do a lot more than just play the six, where he was supporting, he was overlapping, he was charging forward.
Crosses?
Yeah, absolutely. And he looks so good when he does that too. I mean, I'm not sure how you handle that and the other way. But what was great also was that having him out the team for a little bit, he was always an option, but the team's actually grown a little bit since the Arsenal game, I think, and they were bypassing him. They didn't feel that they had to give the ball to him, and that's where I think Jordan Henderson's kind of been sold down the river a little bit by his own teammates bottling it sometimes this season, because we've seen it too often, the centre half. Well, I could pick out that guy, but I'll just give it to Henderson, and Henderson will do that. So I thought the whole balance, and Milner was a big part of that as well. That midfield three, the fears going into that was it was going to be a bit pedestrian, a bit slow, a bit lacking in creativity. Whereas we made mention of this earlier on in the season, and it's worth remembering now that we, in the absence of Coutinho at the start of the season, we did play some very industrious midfields, and we trusted the front three to get on with the business.
That Arsenal game's the classic example of that. We beat them 4-0 at Anfield with Wijnaldum, Can and Henderson in the middle of the park, didn't we? And it's funny that every time we go into it, think, oh, that's a bit industrious. We always seem to do quite well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, think back to that Man City game as well. Ox, Wijnaldum, Can it was for the Man City game, and we blew them apart in the centre of the park. So there are different ways of playing with this midfield at the moment. I think James Milner deserves a start, more often than not, to be honest with you, because he seems to just crop up everywhere. I mean, he's still got magic in his feet as well. Like, some of the skills he was doing over on the right wing when really played most of the time on the left, absolutely brilliant. His delivery's brilliant. But really interesting stat for me out of the game was that we played like half the amount of crosses that we played against West Brom.
Yeah.
We played 41 crosses against West Bromwich Albion. That's a ridiculous amount. Our average through Premier League games thus far, so far this season, sorry, 20. Mm-hmm. We went back to 20 crosses. You know, trying to work that ball into the centre and taking shots from good positions is really, really important. And Henderson helps us to do that. And I also think that having Joe Gomez in there over Trent Alexander-Arnold, because...
Well, he basically played as a back three for large portions
and
of that game.
Here's the thing. When you're a young kid, and I love Trent Alexander-Arnold, and I'm not looking to bash him in any way, shape or form, yeah. But when you're a young kid and you found yourself with the ball at your feet 25 yards out and no passes on, what are you going to do? Cross the ball. Mm. He crossed the ball 12 times in that West Bromwich Albion game and didn't really fucking do much with it, you know what I mean? We got a... I think he was the one who hit the ball into Firmino and we scored off it with Salah, didn't we? But that's too many.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And Joe Gomez doesn't do that. He'll turn round, he'll pass it back and we'll start again and find and sort of chisel out an opening. And that's what Liverpool did better. We weren't rushed into making decisions. We made them in our own time. Yeah. And ultimately, we got a comfortable 3-0 victory off the back of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a couple of little notes that Tom mentioned on the Man of the Match podcast. Matip having the bravery to play 50-yard passes up the field, into feet, makes a massive difference to how we play. The energy of Andy Robertson on the left-hand side, great to see him back in again. I don't think there's any doubt now that he's the first choice over Alberto Moreno, and totally rightly so at the minute, the way he's performing.
Singing his name again.
Boss mate. James Milner, I love James Milner a bit.
Never got your three assists though, did you?
No.
Three goals, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. We didn't even get three assists in the game, did we, technically? But no, great.
Did you set one for a pen no more?
Yeah, not according to TLS, whatever, football, however it is, the app we use. Really, really, really good. And as mentioned, we did this on the final word, which is available in podcast form on the redmentv.com. Highly recommended, every single game covered. Sadio Mane, for a guy who's not in form, is still scoring better than 1 in 3, which still bodes well for a guy who's, once again, to repeat, not in form.
I think he's our second top assist. I think there's a couple on 6. I think Coutinho's on 6, maybe Firmino. And then there's a load of people on 5. And I think Sadio Mane's on 5 as well. So he's doing it at, you know, both ends, goals and assists.
Yeah, absolutely. And just lastly, it's one more player I want to discuss because we didn't get a chance to discuss some other things. Like, look, Loris Karius.
Made a save, Paul.
Nothing. Made a save. It helps. Nothing to go. Here you go. Conclusively, here's our goalkeeping problem solved. But that was a step in the right direction as far as his performances go, because he coupled the save thing.
Yeah.
Making a save means the people who don't really know what they're looking at have got something that they can talk about and remember. But it's
important save.
Exactly. Absolutely. And also, though, just his distribution I thought was absolutely excellent. There was one moment when the ball bounced on the edge of the area and he just ran out and volleyed it. And initially I was like, if that's Mignolet...
It went up to Salah and we nearly scored
exactly,
off it.
Exactly. If that's Mignolet, that is just pure swing a boot at it. And although I still think I could be cynical about it if I wanted to, his distribution, his kicking is very good. And whether it was a pinpoint pass or not, he knew exactly what he was trying to do with that, and it come off and up, and you know, he took some important crosses, he moved the ball on quickly a couple of times when he played long punts down the field trying to get us on the front foot. And that is more like what we're looking for from a goalkeeper.
Yeah, the thing that really impressed me, A, was the save first and foremost, because I was shocked.
I thought it was a goal. As soon as it got cut back, I was like, typical, that's how many times do we concede that goal?
Yeah, all of the time. The one that really impressed me was when he ran out and headed the ball, because that's tough to do.
He screamed for that as well. Like,
yeah, he was in front of us, like you could hear. And the most impressive thing about it is, you're fucked if that goes wrong, Paul. Like, you're completely and utterly fucked.
Well, look at Edison.
Headed it over there, fella. And he's, you know, he's, I don't know whether it went actually over him or not, but he's cushioned it to our guy. He's played a pass. Now, it's very hard to judge people's speed as they're running towards you, and he's done that incredibly well. I'm probably not doing this justice, but go back and watch it if you can, because he's played a pass. There's a guy bearing down on him. His foot's about to come up into his face, and he's played that pass. Had the guy decided to cover the pass off, I'm not sure what he's going to do, but I think he's played it so well that you're just not expecting him to head the ball. Like, and again, that comes down to the strategies of football.
Really, 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 really good. And like I said, we just need more of that. If that becomes, again, I've said this about, I talked about this on the final word,
that needs to be Henderson's base level performance. That needs to be Karius' base level performance. And I don't mean I want to see, I want them to be better. I want them both to play better than they played, more consistently week in, week out. But I don't want to see either of them play worse than that again this season. Because the time for that is done. We're getting to the business end of the season. Those two guys are going to be very, 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 very important for what we do. So yeah, great. A couple of questions before we wrap up then. Jonathan Cook at JFC Tenor. If on deadline day you could sign someone from outside football, like an actor, celebrity, historical figure, etc., for a free role, who would it be? Think usefulness on the pitch or good for the dressing room?
I'm going NFL with this, Paul. And it's...
That's football.
Yeah, sounds... it's Bill Belichick. And
Bill Belichick!
Yeah, they talk about him a lot. Like,
I've got no idea who Bill Belichick is.
Talk about him a lot. Like, his mantra is just do your job. And he just fucking repeats it over and over and over. And I just want him as a defensive coach to just do your job.
Yeah.
This is what you've got. Just do your fucking job, lads. Lads, do your job.
Yeah.
But do your fucking job.
Yeah.
Shut up. Do your job.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I can get behind that. I like the motivational aspect of things. So I go with one of two. And they're both wrestlers. One's Daniel Bryan, you won't be totally familiar with, but he starts a little bit, a little guy. Yeah, yes, yes, yes. That's exactly what I want. That I want that kind of.
Is
I want
he a cheerleader?
Him. Yes.
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 Yes. I want him. Because look, Klopp seems to have abandoned this, like, thanking the crowd shit. Whatever. You know what I mean? He goes off and claps, but he doesn't do any of the saluting thing. Wagner's all over that shit.
We're not drawing towards West Brom no more, lad.
Oh, yeah. But I think there's something to, after a big result, Daniel Bryan and the Liverpool players going up to the cough and giving it the fifth.
The
most wool thing would be for him to have, like, a foam finger and a T-shirt cannon.
Okay, you've outwalled wool.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, that or equally, Stone Cold Steve Austin for motivational, but in a negative reinforcement sense. So whenever someone does something bad, they come off the
pitch. Brain fart.
Stone Cold Stunner. Anyone who gets something wrong, they step off the pitch, Klopp is going around, shaking people's hands, hugging, and basically Klopp goes for the hug, and he just sidesteps, and Stone Cold, bang! Bang, out, Emre Can, post West Brom, laid out in the middle of the Anfield.
I think you've hit on something here, and I'm going to take it in a slightly different direction. Randy Orton.
Similarly, right? From out of nowhere.
When they're in the box, they're just about to take the shot. From out of nowhere!
Absolutely. Yeah, but I mean, VAR would fuck him big time, but yeah, why not? Definitely for the shits and giggles of it all, 100% into that. Yeah, let us know for anyone outside of football that you would sign up for a free roll around Liverpool in the comments. Jordan Gomez then, at Jordan Gomez 102. What are your top three favourite Liverpool player celebrations of all time? One I think that's a bit underrated is the Suarez free kick versus Zenit where he high fives and Rican just starts screaming. I actually don't remember that one. I do remember that game for being me. I physically jumped up to play a header on the cop.
Did you?
Yeah, we put a ball on and I jumped and the guy next to me went, got up well there, lads. Soz. Give us one.
I love the frequency with which we used to see the Daniel Sturridge dance.
Okay. Yeah. God bless it. It's funny that it was Huddersfield the last time maybe not the last time we saw it, but they showed it. It was in the build to the game. Liverpool were like, last time we played Huddersfield and it was a clip of Daniel Sturridge and it was a bit like... Yeah, I like the dancers. I don't think you can top, and we've got it on the wall over there, I don't think you can top Robbie Fowler sniffing the white line as greatest football celebration ever. For pure, unadulterated comedic value, Luis Suarez diving in front of David Moyes, it just doesn't get... Football gets shitter every single year. They can try and sell it all they want in terms of the pace and the aggression and the beauty and the beautiful game and blah, 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 blah. Bullshit. There's every year a character from the game retires and football becomes more and more bland. Luis Suarez was criticised for diving by the manager of our big local derby rivals, scores a goal in Goodison Park, runs the half of the pitch and dives in front of him as a celebration. Like, Jürgen Klinsmann doing the dive celebration was hilarious. It was amazing. I'd never seen anything like it when he did that back in the day, and that was an amazing piece of like self-awareness and comedy. But it was, he knew exactly what he was doing, and he did it because he knew we'd love it, and he did it as a fuck you to Moyes. And to have the bottle to do that in a football match.
In
that football match is, for me, the greatest Liverpool
I do love the golf club one. Bellamy and Reese, the golf club one was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And Gerrard kissing the camera, mate, in Old Trafford.
Yeah, every time.
Got him.
Just the first time, 2008, 2009, it's fantastic because it's so off the cuff. The other one, maybe Michael Owen monkey flip celebration.
Love that one.
The winning goal, Arsenal FA Cup final 2001, because, and I've said this before, who knew Michael Owen had that much charisma? Michael Goal Owen, who is, as someone, I think it was Noel Gallagher once described, Alan Shearer as a CID cop and Michael Owen as a CID cop in training. No personality or humanity to them whatsoever. Apologies if you're watching this. If you're from CID, please, we're fine. We're nice people. You're just dead boring. Michael Owen scores the winning goal in FA Cup final and fucking somersaults.
Go ahead.
Who knew?
Cissé used to do some decent ones as well, didn't he?
Cissé was always going to come to. If only... He very rarely got it right. I think the first time he tried it, he kind of fell over. And I must admit, as much as I love a good flip goal celebration, it's telling that the players who have those celebrations never become prolific goal scorers. Mm-hmm. And I always think it's because they think too much about what they're going to do once they've scored than the actual scoring of it. And it's why, in that regard, I love every single goal celebration of Jordan Henderson. Because he has no pre-plan. He doesn't do any that bullshit. Like, he just screams and runs like someone's just given him a fucking Super Nintendo as the last present on Christmas Day. Yeah, unbelievable.
You know, one of my favourite celebrations, it's not for a goal, is just Jamie Carragher when we won the European Cup. And in kind of the same way, he could just... Everyone else is off celebrating together, and he
couldn't walk a minute
running
earlier.
Around on his own, limping around, just trying to jump. Like,
bounding.
That's brilliant. That's just pure emotion. There's nothing else there to that.
Absolutely, yeah. Fantastic. I think we've nailed that. But if you've got some more, do let us know by tweeting at the Red Men TV with top three favourite Liverpool player celebrations. Maybe. Boring that, isn't it? It's not the Bebeto, is it? Let us know then by tweeting in. As ever, if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do. I'm at the Paul Machin, Chris is at Mr. Blood Red, at the Red Men TV for the Red Men Twitter account as
Interestingly,
well.
Interestingly, me and Tom are talking about the celebrations outside, and it's not Liverpool ones, but you mentioned both the ones that were my favourites. You mentioned the Klinsmann and you mentioned the Bebeto.
Yeah.
It's mad, that.
Absolutely amazing. There we go. Too much time spent together over the years. Brilliant. As I've said, and I'll say it time and time again, we've got a fantastic offering on the redmentv.com at the moment. And you know what? Going forward from now on, we've always had a good offering. We've upped the ante big time.
Very good now.
Not only do we do up to 20 podcasts a week exclusive for the subscribers, what can people do now?
Just to clarify, it's 20 podcasts a month.
A month.
Yeah.
A month. Sorry, I didn't mean to say a month. Apologies. A week! Not a guarantee. Up to 20 podcasts a month, but what's special about what we've updated on the website right now?
Well, nothing. No, I'm kidding. So you can now get your podcast into your podcast app. So be that iTunes, be that Stitcher, be that any Android player with your Red Men TV logins, you can get in there, you can listen, download all of those shows into your player so that you can listen to Red Men TV on your commute, download it over your Wi-Fi, use your data, whatever you want to do it. The freedom of how you use Red Men TV is now totally yours to control.
Fantastic, yeah. And as I say, the content is amazing. We've got the pre-aired Man of the Match podcast. We're doing the final words. Chris and the video sense is now doing an incredible stats and tactics show, which is a real deep dive into how Liverpool are winning and, you know, occasionally losing games. So if you want to know more about football and more about Liverpool, we have got you covered on the Red Men TV, on
Mel
Red Men
Radio tomorrow as well.
And on the Red Men TV.
Deadline day, going to grill Mel Ready. Going to be great.
Fantastic. You've done well to keep a straight face while saying that. That's well done. Thank you very much for listening, guys. As I say, go and subscribe. It's free for the first month for you to check it out. Then £5 a month thereafter. It helps make all of this a reality. Become a Red Men TV supporter, a Red Men Radio supporter. And we'll be back with more free podcasty goodness next week. Walk on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.